move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we finish up the draft with the final three picks of the 2024 Miami Dolphins class. We kick it off with a player I loved throughout the process, wide receiver Malik Washington, plus in the sixth and seventh rounds, Cal safety Patrick McMorris, and another diminutive slot receiver in USC's Taj Washington. We'll do the tape, we'll do the fit, the metrics, the reports, the sound bites, more from Greer and McDaniel, all of that and more from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast.
Let it drive first down.
Warren Sharp's consensus big board draft value story or article or tweet, whatever you want to call it, gave Miami the second highest value in terms of where guys were selected compared to the expectation across several draft analysts in their consensus big board. I know that's not really, like, it doesn't really matter because, as Chris Greer said in his Saturday night press conference or his draft recap media address, that we just don't really care about what the media has to say because, well, why would you? Why would people inside the building doing this stuff for as much time as they put into it, why would they care? I mean, you can consult, you know, a Daniel Jeremiah or a Dane Brugler or whatever you might use. That's all good and well. But I saw one consensus draft grades, and they use like the NY Post, like Vinny Iver from like Sport from SI. Like who cares? Who cares? But anyway, I thought it was worth putting up there. And I guess I just fundamentally disagree with draft grades because they haven't even hit the damn field yet and you're not really taking into account fit and there's a lot that goes into it, right? So with all of that in mind, we're going to do the job that I do here where I focus on one team and the players on that one team and a specific focus on what that team looks for and the schemes of that team. I just think it's a lot easier to cover one team than it is 32, almost an impossible task. And so today, with our Dolphins-specific lens, taking a look at the last three picks, we already have podcasts on Chop and Paul, and then another podcast on Wright and Kamara. So catch up on all those if you have not done so. And just real quick, a refresher, after watching more Chop, I'm more excited about his game and what he offers in multiple positions and going after the quarterback and just how he can reset line of scrimmages. After watching more Patrick Paul, there's a lot of concern there. And just be fully transparent about the tape and what we saw with his work at Houston, and Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel alluded to this, but the technique is wild. That there's a really wide base in terms of how he sets with his arms. Like he catches blocks more than throwing the punch initially as the tackle, and then he's kind of narrow and upright in his stance as well. So the whole thing kind of has to be remade, but that's what they talked about doing in their Friday night press conference. So we'll see what happens in OTAs and in training camp and in the preseason. We have lots to look at finally, it seems like, for the first time in preseason, because we have young players that are worth looking at their developmental tracks in this year's August football session, preseason, right? But we also mentioned Jalen Wright and Mo Kamara. Those are two more guys that after watching more tape, I was even more impressed because Wright's ability and pass protection, whoo, buddy. And he also gets a piece of the edge on some of those jet sweep lead blocks that Chris Brooks did a year ago or that Julian Hill did a year ago. Just really creates flexibility in your offensive variation from different personnel groupings, just like the two receivers we just drafted. We'll talk about that here in just a second. So a big fan of that selection. And then Mo Kamara, I'm kind of shocked he went this late. 6'1" is kind of the reason why that happened, but like you can still win as a pass rusher at that height. So very big fan of three of the four picks in terms of what I saw on tape right now, and I can see the idea and the thinking behind the development of the fourth player in there. And then we have three more guys to talk about, and we start today on this podcast in the sixth round with a player who Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who you guys know how highly I think of him, had as a third round grade, and Pro Football Focus's guide had him as a third or fourth round target. One of the baddest dudes in the country for my money in the entire draft. A player that was recommended to me from my favorite evaluator and favorite YouTuber, Brett Coleman, specifically for Miami, Malik Washington. The Virginia wide receiver was selected with the 184th overall pick in the sixth round overall. And at the risk of sounding hyperbolic here, I think this was my favorite pick in the entire draft. This dude is so electric. And you'll see because of the time I have dedicated to Malik compared to the other two picks. And I like the other two picks. There's a certain hierarchy of ranking there, but this one, there's a lot more information here on Malik Washington because I just couldn't stop watching him. And he has some stuff to him, right? Some PG-friendly S-word to him. From Dane Brugler's guy, you can feel his rugged toughness, on tape. That's from an anonymous NFL scout. And yeah, you feel that right away from watching this guy. Twitchy as hell with initial quickness to thwart press coverage. They utilize him on jet motion a lot to get him free releases schemed up so you don't have to have him, you know, making that move to kind of slow down his release a little bit. Have him hit the ground running on that sheet motion, on that exit motion, on that jet sweep motion, that it helps him just get off press coverage even more. And they also aligned him in the backfield and handed him the football a few times as a tailback. I watched a few tapes of his games, but the one against NC State gives you the full complement of what his skill set truly is. He catches a screen pass and shook two tackles and goes for 60 yards, but he did get hawked on that play. He got caught from behind. So the long speed is not as impressive as the short area burst or even the medium, like the middle of the run speed. As he gets going, guys can run him down. It's sort of Jarvis Landry, but like a lot faster, if that makes sense. I don't know if that tracks, but he is a faster version of Jarvis Landry, but he doesn't have the waddle or hill. Like once he's gone, it's a touchdown. Like doesn't have that type of long speed in him. He also in this game caught a wheel route where he literally put the slot cornerback on the ground with the move, the out move before the up, and went for 40 in the honey hole. He also caught a hookup in the middle of the field and bowls over three players and damn near pushes a pile across the goal line for a gain of 20. That's the Jarvis Landry that I saw in his game. He's the kind of guy that can make our quick schemed up game effective in that he can turn a short play into a home run, which is what the entire Dolphins wide receiver room does, right? He's just a baller, man. He has the nuance, the footwork, the subtle movements to make coverage expand and really increase the spacing in their zones in the defense, the head nods, the little body language, the arm over, just the stuff that he does in his routes. It's very polished. You wouldn't think it at 5'8.5", but the ball is in the air. It belongs to Malik Washington. He goes up and plucks it with strong, confident hands. He's 191, but he plays like he's 220. Coleman again texts me saying that he has a Tyreek type of build and composition to his body, just a ball of muscle with a temperament and explosiveness. Like, gosh, I love this player. I cannot believe that 183 players were selected ahead of this guy. There's no way he'll be the 183rd most productive rookie in this year's draft class. Way above that. Some of the things that stood out to me the other way, wasn't really asked to block a whole heck of a lot, but if you just go off of his temperament, that usually translates. Had some ball security issues, 5 career fumbles. Mentioned he's a bit undersized, and you know, while he's fast and has a 60-yard screen pass in his back pocket, he did get hawked and doesn't have that long sprinter speed. It feels weird to call a 4.47 guy anything less than fast, but he's, again, quicker in short spaces than he is when he opens it up out in space. As far as his fit here with the Miami Dolphins, he was almost exclusively a slot player at Virginia, played 88% of his reps inside, but damn it, if this isn't a guy who can align there in 11 personnel and beat one-on-one coverage or settle into soft spots versus the zone, or if they operate in cover two with Reek and Waddle on the perimeter, he can split that coverage and go down the middle of the field and track a deep ball. His best route that he runs is the slot fade or the boundary takeoff, and that is, guess what, the best throw that Tua has in his club, in his bag, for all of my money. He does a little stutter release and then engages insane mode, which, you know, is a Tesla comment there. But he does that to climb over the top of the corner, then stacks him and puts him on his back, which is what stacking is, with exceptional football tracking and finishing skills. He lays out, he finds a way to haul it in, has quiet late hands. It's so impressive. I think he has a chance to come in and compete right away for playing time. And if you heard Mike McDaniel's call to him after the draft or during the draft, he said, your opportunity is what you make of it right now, basically. And we think you can be very productive right away as long as you're a pro and you have a chance to do that and be a pro. And this guy, go watch his Steve Smith, what's it called? Uncut, I think is the name of the podcast on YouTube. Go watch that 22-minute video and tell me this guy's not a pro and ready to go right away. Let's go ahead and actually hear from Malik about what he knows about Miami's offense and how he thinks he fits into the offense.
Yeah, I think the way that they run their offense, the motions, the different ways they use people to get open and allow them to just be themselves, allow them to work, I think that'll be very beneficial to me. Just getting a chance to find some underneath routes, find some ways to get open and then let that yak Some of that, a big piece of my game, let that shine through.
First time hearing from Malik there. Some more data here on the new Dolphins wide receiver. Only Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze, who were drafted number 6 and number 9 overall, not number 184, had more catches of 20-plus yards last season. He had a drop rate of just 2.5%. He made 11 contested catches, which was 28th in college football, and he does that at a two-thirds rate, by the way. That's usually a 6'4" receiver stat, a Devontae Parker stat, right? Not one for a 5'8 guy who actually can get open and separate, unlike Devontae Parker. His counting stats were off the charts, 110 grabs, 1,426 yards, 9 tugs last season. For his career, 230, 2775 yards, and 12 touchdowns. He broke the most tackles of any receiver in college football last year with 35. That's 3 per game. A lot of guys don't make 3 catches per game. He's breaking 3 tackles per game. His top routes from a production standpoint were hitches, outs, screens, and corners, and that's where the space exists within our current personnel right now, and some things that teams took away by just negating last year, like the Titans game, for instance. Let's just go ahead and not play the backside out route because I'm not going to throw it. That's where he can settle in. It's funny how that works to me. 42.5-inch vertical. That's more than Chris Chambers, by the way. It's 99th percentile, and he did 19 bench reps of 225 at just 191 pounds. That is crazy. It's almost as crazy as the 30 reps that Patrick Paul did with 36-inch arms, even though he weighs 150 pounds more than him or 140 pounds more than him. 3.12 yards per route ran last season, a 67% contested catch rate, and more missed tackles forced than any receiver in the country with that 2.5% drop rate. I mean, would that be of interest to you at all? Have mercy. Tough, tough dude. I asked him about how do you cultivate that toughness that leads to contested catches at your size and leads to big runs after the catch where you bowl over tacklers. Here's Malik Washington.
Yeah, man, some of that stuff you can't cultivate. You got to be born with. You got to be born with a certain mindset, a certain toughness. And I feel like ever since I started playing football, that's just how I play. That's how I play the game. That's how I see the game. And it's going to be hard nose. You're going to have to stick your nose in there, get dirty sometimes.
And I liked this tape so much, I just couldn't stop watching the damn thing. Or even content that he took part in, like Steve Smith's podcast again, where he demonstrates his feel for coverage, what different leverages entail, and how it alters your footwork or the timing and pacing of the routes. Steve Smith watches tape with him and says, I think you can do this right away. You're not going to have to come in and learn how to time your routes within the offense. And it's so evident on tape. I mean, that Virginia offense scored a lot of points. They were a terrible football team, but they scored a lot of points, and nearly 50% of the offensive production went through Malik Washington. 110 catches in 11 game or 12 game season. It's pretty damn good, right? I love the way he hugs the line on his routes. Like Kyle Krabs put a great tweet up of him at Northwestern, really showing off some of the catching the hands skills, the plucking skills, but also how he hugs the line on his routes and doesn't round those things off. It reminds me of the Buffalo game last year. Like I know Tua maybe should have gone somewhere else with that throw on the cover 2 honey hole shot to Chase Claypool, but it's probably the worst route I saw a Dolphins receiver run all year. That's not going to happen with this guy. I mentioned the feel for timing and tempo and pace. That's all there. He runs this out route against Louisville, where he's the one receiver to the boundary, the short side of the field, and they don't have a perimeter cover guy. There's like inside leverage, and he just gives him the outside access. And he snaps the out off like very quick against this off coverage that gives him 3 or 4 yards of space when he catches the ball and turns back upfield so that he can make a move to make the guy miss. And he does it and goes off for a massive game up the sideline. I want to ask him about how he sees the field when I get him on the podcast here, because to me, it's like his strength, and that's also his quarterback strength, which obviously is a good thing to have all those things in line. So I love this pick. I'm a huge fan of what he does. I think he comes in right away as a rookie and produces. I think he's in the competition for that number 3 job right now, provided no other veterans are signed, which I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, but I think that Malik Washington has a chance right away to be productive in this Dolphins offense in 2024. Let's go ahead and take our first break, come back on the other side, and do the 6th round draft pick, Cal safety, Patrick McMorris. That's next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. 2 more picks to cover here on the Draft Recap Podcast. We have done the first 5, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. Now we're on to our 6th player and Cal safety, Patrick McMorris. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off here with what McMorris feels he brings to the Dolphins as a safety and special teamer.
I'm a disciplined player. I'm aggressive. I'm able to play inside the box as well as play outside, play in a cover 2 high safety look, smart and intelligent player who loves the game.
Let's go ahead and take a look at Patrick McMorris's film at Cal last season. And just a quick tip, don't ever watch a post safety play against Auburn, because talk about a waste of time. It's just him getting to landmarks, getting to his footwork, kind of reading the coverage, and then it's a 3-yard run that goes 15 yards further or closer to the ball than where he is. But just want to go ahead and make a quick note on this. I think special teams is the route for this young man to make the roster. There's some late reactions on defense, not particularly explosive, which you'll see by his athletic testing was not very good at all. Doesn't really take on or get off blocks or arrive with force. I don't like the way he approaches tackles. There's no wrapping there. I wouldn't have noticed him on tape if I wasn't specifically watching him for the Dolphins this year. Now, I did manage to come across some special teams work, and that's where I think that his calling card can be, especially as a rookie. Never want to limit a young man's long-term potential by any stretch, but usually that's the year one case for late day three picks and new DFAs, and he showed out in that department. Has a good understanding of angles and how to break down in space to make those tackles or force the return man in that wide open space to stop their feet and change directions, and that's going to be a very big key for McMorris this rookie season as he tries to find a role in that safety room. Let's go ahead and go back to Patrick and hear what he thinks that his special teams experience can do to help him make this roster come August.
Yeah, I mean, I played special teams all throughout high school and college. High school, I was mainly returner. But going into college, being as I am a bigger safety, I played on all four special teams my first 2 years at San Diego State, and then I was able to make my continue playing special teams throughout my time at San Diego State and at Cal. So I've played special teams for 5 years now.
And when you watch McMorris play defense, those same traits apply. You know, Cal does use him all over the defensive backfield, even though he winds up in the post a lot. But it looks to me, and I don't know how this works because I don't know the calls of the defense. I can give you an idea of the coverage based upon how it plays out, but I don't know their tips and their landmarks and the things that they're really focusing on in their defensive calls. But it looks to me like he's kind of the linchpin in their ability to disguise the coverage on the back end. He's rolling into the post from those two high looks, or stepping down into that robber roll from the single high safety look, where he's trying to, the robber roll basically wants to cut off crossing routes and try to put a player in the equation that maybe shouldn't have been there as far as the quarterback was concerned. He's covering up the tight end down there, flying down and run support, did a lot of that. So I think that's why special teams value is worth watching from day one here in camp. Even though he lines up a lot in the post and rotates into that position, he does a little bit of everything in terms of his variation there. So maybe some smart, some intelligent football IQ there for this player. Again, not really a wrap-up tackler. A lot of his hits come from depth where he drops his shoulder, and I just don't think that's going to translate well at this level when guys are bigger and stronger and faster. He did dump the UW running back Dylan Johnson on a swing route where he lays his shoulder across the thigh pad, and that's, you know, textbook in terms of where you want to strike, but I think there needs to be a little refinement in the tackling and the wrapping fundamentals of his game. We did hear Chris Greer talk about this pick and the group of safeties and how the Dolphins feel they are in that position group right now on, what is it, April 29th. Here is Chris Greer on Patrick McMorris and the Dolphins safety room.
I mean, we feel good about the players there. Obviously, I think we could add more depth there. And so adding him was a player that the coaching staff and scouts had kind of identified focusing on. And so they were blowing up Mike and I here before that pick. But, you know, get this guy. And they appreciate how he's a smart player, is competitive, plays hard, and I think we feel good about where he is and his development coming in here and competing for a spot.
So I think the calling card are pretty smart football player, some good angles. I think the thing I can tell most from his tape is there's lots of processing happening there between the ears. He seems to be very focused on his footwork and staying choppy and his fundamentals, and that tells me that he's going to get the most out of what he has, which, I mean, if you're just going off the testing, it's not much because, you know, didn't run the 40. His 4.28 short shuttle was like 40th percentile. His 7.09 three cone was like 38th percentile. The 31 vert was like 25th percentile, and so was the 9.4 broad. He's 6 foot tall, 207 pounds. Just not really an athletic marvel by any stretch of the imagination with how he tested in Indianapolis. So PFF numbers had 10 pressures on 60 career pass rush reps over five seasons. Both of those... at Cal, I should say, one year at Cal, 4 years at San Diego State. I don't know where I got those numbers from. 192 tackles, 70 of those were run stops, but he had 63 missed tackles, a 20% missed tackle rate. Again, doesn't really wrap that often, so you're going to have to find a way to make that happen in the National Football League when the ball carriers are much tougher. 7 touchdowns allowed in coverage, 6 picks, and a passer rating of 81.5. Allowed in coverage. He played 1,008 snaps total last year, and that included 124 on special teams, but he was everywhere pre-snap. 287 down in the box, 192 in the slot, 381 in the post, some on the defensive line, some out wide. He played everywhere. So that's Patrick McMorris, your sixth-round draft pick, your safety out of Cal. I think that group, just kind of looking at it as a total right now, as a whole, I come away from the draft and, you know, we're going to get the second wave of free agency coming up here, I think, you know, any day now. But I think for the Dolphins, maybe more patient into the post-June 1 when the $18 million from Xavier Howard arrives. I think that's kind of when you start to look into some more veteran acquisitions here on the roster, because now, as of today, none of the signings impact your comp formula. So the Dolphins will get those 90s picks, the 2 third-round draft pick in the compensatory formula for Robert Hunt and for Christian Wilkins. But I think that safety group, just looking at who's out there, like Jayron Kearse, Justin Simmons, Quandre Diggs is my personal favorite. There are so many veterans out there that I think can give you, you know, not just a third safety, but a partner with Javon Holland, because I view Jordan Poyer right now as more of a third safety. So we'll see what it looks like come opening day. But I think the Dolphins, I have to imagine that safety room is not quite done yet. And neither is this podcast. Let's go ahead and take our last break right there. Come back on the other side and get to our final pick of the draft. We'll also go ahead and rattle off the UDFA names that we have seen reported so far. All of that next here on the Drive Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Final segment of the draft evaluation recap editions here of the Drive Time Podcast. Again, we have done Chop Robinson for his own episode, Patrick Paul for his own episode, Jalen Wright and Mo Kamara got the same episode, and now we're closing it up with 3 players here, late day 3 picks, and it concludes with USC wide receiver number 241 in the draft, 7th-round pick, Taj Washington. And first, I always love me a soccer player on the football field, because you can see it in how they move in their feet. And he played soccer, football, and track in high school. And you see those soccer skills and how choppy and how quick and how efficient he is in the footwork. He aligned in the backfield 25 times for USC. So another one of these guys that can really help you vary your looks from different personnel groupings. Like, you can run out so many different variations and the defense has to say, well, I think this is a personnel group to match what they have. But then if they put Tyreek and Taj Washington in the backfield, all of a sudden things change. So it's just fascinating to me how this offense has come together here in year 3, and surprise, surprise, another detailed route runner who uses every step with a purpose to maximize driving a defensive back off a landmark, to maximize his own ability to create space. They used him on jet sweeps, and I think the tackle breaking and contested catch stuff is great and a testament to his toughness, but watch him climb up on the strong safety in the run game and completely outmatched from a size perspective and hit those with great effectiveness. He's just a tough little ball of energy, really. I think he could have had a much higher volume of receptions if he did not play with Caleb Williams at USC, but also would not have had the same deep ball production with another quarterback. The reason I say that is because that Caleb just is not going to play in rhythm. It's just not his game. He was going to move around, break tackles, and hunt for big plays. And on so many of those reps, Taj has created a separation in a short period of time, and then he's left after that to go execute a broken play route. But strong hands, one drop all year long, always comes back to the football and knows how to use his body to shield the catch point. Fun 7th-round draft pick here. Not usually too often we get these. We've taken long snappers in the past and, you know, field goal kickers and punters. I thought going into the offseason this was one of the biggest needs in terms of his fit on the Dolphins offense, that one of the biggest needs was a separator inside to take advantage of the space that both Tyreek and Jalen Waddle can create on the perimeter. So many of those late season woes as far as the offense goes was inability for other receivers to get open against one-on-one coverage. But with this, now you enter Jonnu Smith, you enter Malik Washington, you enter Taj Washington. That's basically the game of all 3 of those guys in the passing game. High production on balance, but mostly against man coverage. These guys are all very difficult covers in that regard. And this offseason seems to have really patched the few holes in the vessel of the number one offense. I think it's crazy to think it could get even better if those pieces mesh quickly and play like their pass tape would suggest they can. Now, I know you're going to come back and say, Travis, the offense is not better because the offensive line's not better. We'll see. We'll see about that. And I saw that someone was coming at me on Twitter the guy that has a, I'm not going to say what it is in his profile picture, but it's not PG, that's for sure. And he was saying, like, how can you get off these deep slot fades when you can't block for two just going to get sacked and have enough time? It's like, bro, those throws take 1.5 seconds to get off, and nobody gets home in 1.5 seconds. Plus, how many games last year did Tua have long touchdown passes where Connor Williams was out, where Teron Armstead was out, where Austin Jackson, like, I don't know. Maybe we don't watch the games anymore. I don't know. But anyway, I understand the offensive line's a concern, and I think I do want one more interior offensive lineman as well. But I just think if you're saying that that's the biggest important piece where this offense is right now, you just don't understand, because this is a Tua masks offensive line issues, man. I know there's some true dropback situations where you want better protection, and I agree that it was a problem down the stretch, but this offense can still function at a very, very, very high level with the offensive line it has right now, and it will, and it's going to. Back to Washington here. He also has really good special teams value as a returner and gunner. I think Coach Crossman will like this soundbite from Taj Washington.
That's huge. I mean, special teams has always been a part of my game. Coaches have to beg me over the years to, you know, take maybe one off or, you know, things like that. But, you know, gunner on punt, corner on punt return, kickoff returner, off returner. A lot of history in special teams. I let it compete. Anytime I get the opportunity to be on the field, I want to be out there.
PFF says he caught 59 of 74 targets last year. That's an 80% catch rate and an average depth of target of 10.7 yards. So a highly efficient player with explosiveness and downfield skills for day. He caught 13 of 15 passes that were 20 yards or deeper down the field last year. 13 of 15. That's your screen game efficiency. And he went for 596 yards and 6 touchdowns on those plays. He played 89% in the slot. That's so similar to Malik Washington, who played 88% there and caught 12 of 22 deep targets for 419 and 3 scores. And again, two of his best throws, in my opinion, the slot fades, the boundary takeoffs. I just think it's his best throw, and that's these guys' best routes. Taj averaged 3.06 yards per route ran last year. Anything over 2 is good. Over 3 is fantastic. He averaged 8.6 yards after catch per reception. He was tagged with the one drop, a 1.7% drop rate, and he made 8 of 12 contested catches and also forced 18 missed tackles. How did you become such a good runner after the catch? Here's Taj Washington.
Yes, sir. Just growing up, playing running back mostly. You know, I'm the youngest of a big family. So, well, not anymore, but, you know, growing up, I was always the youngest, had to run away from a lot of folks, you know, so, just made me more physical and, elusive, I would say.
So 1,062 total yards, 8 touchdowns, 18 yards per reception, and his production spider graph that measures his efficiency against the rest of the class: 94 receiving grade versus single coverage, 98 receiving grade versus zone coverage, 95th percentile in yards per route ran, 84% separation rate against single coverage, and he was open on 89% of the targets that he received. He was 5th in deep yardage and 29th in screen yardage. So you can get him behind the line, or you can get him down the field in the end zone. All right. That is a wrap on these evaluation podcasts. On Wednesday, we're going to do a comprehensive draft thought pod that I think you guys will really enjoy. I have some thoughts, both good and bad. And Friday, we'll get back to the roster reset series ahead of rookie minicamp this weekend, which rolls into OTAs. So busy, busy times ahead here on the podcast. And you know what one of my favorite parts of the job here is, guys? Is being around the players. And you can do that too, because Finn's Weekend returns May 31st through June 1st in Coconut Grove. Join Dolphins players, coaches, alumni, and more for a one-of-a-kind offshore fishing competition and an evening of celebration with food, drinks, and great music. Register your boat or purchase party tickets on finsweekend.com. All proceeds from Finn's Weekend will benefit the Baptist Health Foundation. And also, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. Go ahead and follow me on social at Wingfield NFL, the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with my guys, Seth and Juice, and the YouTube channel for the Drive Time interviews. Hopefully we get some of the draft prospects on here as well. Media availabilities, Dolphins Today, and so much more. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Caroline and Cameron, daddy's coming home.